Blog Talk Radio.
He was up each morning with the dawn, because he knew his daily run was long and hard, and he had to be ready to get his freight train down the track. Determination he would never lack. The little locomotive called Freight Train Freddy.
Hi everyone, welcome to Getting On Top. We're here Tuesdays from 4 to 4:30 p.m. That's East Coast time. And we broadcast from the Southern Hudson Valley region of New York State along the beautiful Hudson River. It's just a few out of town. It's just the northern suburbs of New York City, my hometown. And that little ditty was Freight Train Freddy from the book of the same name that I wrote. It's a rhyming children's story about a 19th century steam engine as he makes his way through the Old West and with all his trials and tribulations. And the person who sang and wrote that song is Peter Tazone, who was also the illustrator of the book. And Peter draws some gorgeous pictures there. And if you go to our website, ftfcreations.com, that's FTF as in Freight Train Freddy, creations.com, you'll see some of Peter's beautiful drawings and also see some of the rhymes that I wrote for the book, so you can check it out. You could also get the e-book for $2.99. That's for the Kindle or the Apple iPad. And the Apple iPad also has the Total Song. You could also get the you could order the soft cover version of the book as well there. I'm flying solo today. I do have a very extensive background in computers. I started right out of college as a programmer in the 60s, and I know a bit about programming, although I haven't been a technical for quite a while. I'm going to talk about computers just to give people an overview and, you know, give them some hints about why things work a certain way, certain little ideas that make things run a little simpler, and explain some things and also maybe cut down on someone's frustration, because I know machines can be frustrating. If you keep doing the same thing, they'll keep giving you the same answer even though you want a different one. It does get frustrating at times. So, you know, before I went into the healing arts, which was about 10 years ago, I was a business person, a computer person, salesperson, had a corporate training business. Just to briefly go through my official background here on the page, the name of the show today is How Computers Work, and it's a non-technical overview. Today, computers run our lives from laptops to mobile phones, automobiles, appliances, wristwatches, on and on and on. They're in just about everything, because they're so tiny now. Not when I started, they were huge. They were like a big dresser drawer, huge, maybe 5 feet high and 3 feet deep and 6 feet wide, and they cost $250,000. Then that was a slow one. So you can imagine the how they've come down in price these days. You can get a beautiful laptop for, you know, $500 to $1,000. So my career spans 30 years in the IT industry. I started as a programmer, system analyst, and rose to the position of programming systems manager at ADP, serving the Wall Street community. After starting and running my corporate training consultancy, I experienced a spontaneous emotional healing, which led me to explore the healing arts. And now I practice emotional healing as a emotional healing practitioner, helping people heal their emotional trauma and deal with their depression and help heal that and take away the pain and the darkness, which I did for myself, and now I share my information. I also been studying human behavior for over 40 years and always had a thing about helping people. So, you know, these things don't just come out of nowhere. You know, I'm watching a TV show about interviewing comedians, and, you know, they all said when they were 3 or 4 or 5, they got a microphone or make-believe microphone or was performing for the family, you know, and just doing it on their own. It's just something natural. I always liked trying to help people when I was a child, but the lure of technology tore me away, but I still studied it and read all the books on every aspect of psychology and human behavior, and then, bingo, I became a healer. Okay, it's not about me today. It's about computers, so let's get going. I took about 5 minutes, but I can go about 5 minutes. I can go about 10 or 15 minutes over, so let's see what we can cover today. All right, now, let's just, you know, I like to start with the general and get more specific. On the pictures on my ad today, if you see it, it shows the different picture of a computer, a cell phone, and, you know, household appliances, you know, just to give people idea. And so what's the difference? Let's go to the very limited or the very precise to the most general. When computers are in a car, in a watch, in an appliance, it's just something you don't really, you know, have much, a lot of input in. You have different buttons to push, but it's all kind of predetermined. And that's called firmware. It's a term, it means firm. It's just there, it stays there, it doesn't change. For the life of the appliance or the life of the thing that you own, there's no updates or anything like that, no new versions, and that's fine. You know, it serves its purpose, and it's very specific. Sometimes they even program it into the hardware. The actual coding, the actual firmware, sometimes is partly hardware as well. The way the actual chip is made that runs the object, be it a car or appliance in your home or whatever, or their watch or whatever it may be. And, you know, it's going into more and more things, and it's great. You know, makes our lives easier. I have to give you this example because it was such a profound thing to me. I was in college in the 60s. I was an engineering student, math student. Well, when I was an engineering student, we had to do a lot of problems, solve a lot of problems. Then we needed, you know, with today, people would use a calculator. Oh, it was arithmetic, but it was, you know, long numbers. So you had to multiply, divide, and so on and so forth. And, you know, you had to do long division, or you had to use what we call the slide rule. And, you know, they work, but, boy, if I had a calculator back then. Back then, calculators were big electromechanical machines. They were big as, they looked like a cash register. Basically, a cash register is a calculator that does a particular function. It looked just like the old-fashioned cash registers. Remember those? And it cost like $500. So, you know, I didn't have a penny. I was a kid. I didn't have any money at all. We were not a wealthy family. So, you know, I would have killed for a calculator. Now they're almost free. You can get one for $1. You know? And they come in every phone, and your watches have calculators. It's crazy, you know, the difference. But anyway, just a little story there. All right, so everything now goes from an appliance, which is a dedicated one, and then you have things like a phone. Now, a phone is a computer. That's really what it is. That's all it is. And phone systems, even the big ones that you had in your house years ago, ran by, you know, computers to make all the exchanges and connect everything. But now it's a little tiny computer. You hold in your hands and it does all these marvelous things. It's wonderful. You have everything at your fingertips here. You know, it's amazing all the functions you have. And those, you know, you can't. So we're getting up to the more general, but for phones, you know, you have different applications. They call apps now. App is just a shortened version of the word application program. All right? And, you know, they run and for the individual, and they have certain specific functions, like one for weather, one for the stock market. They have calculators in here. They have computerized photography, right, to take a picture, a camera in there, and so on and so forth. All right, you know, everybody knows what they are. And, you know, they get updated. Different versions get updated from time to time. So that's your phone. And then you go to a laptop, which is an actual computer. The difference is with a laptop, you also have versions. You have also apps or, you know, application programs. But you also can program with those. You can write programs, and people who are programmers, hackers, whatever, use those to write programs. So those are the most general type of computer instruments, if you will. And just briefly, you know, I'm going to get more to what you're doing all the time, but I just want to give you a little background, okay? How does a computer work? There's three types of programs, basically. There's a systems program, which is a general program, which is like Apple, Windows 10 or 7 or XP and so on. That's a systems program. Everything runs within the systems program. Within the systems program runs your application programs or your apps, as you like to call them now. And the other type of program is called a utility program, which is not something people use to get information or do specific things. But the utility program, like the name implies, it cleans things up. Like, you know, in your house, when you vacuum the floor or do something or wash the clothes or iron or, you know, wash the dishes, that's a utility thing. You're cleaning things up, right? You got a messy room, you clean it up. That's doing a utility, okay? That's useful. That's where the word comes from. Well, a utilities program, and this is where it helps you, the regular user. What it could do is it reorganizes the information on your hard drive. Okay, you store information in two places, one on your hard drive and one in memory. Okay, where it says so many gigabytes of memory, so many gigabytes of hard drive. Maybe today it can go up to 128 gigabytes. It's unbelievable. You know, it's so many. It's billions of bytes. Huge. So anyway, if you don't reshuffle, reorganize the hard drive, it takes longer to look up things. All right? I won't bore you with the details of how that works, but after a while, things get put in different places, and it takes a while to find them. And when you reorganize them, it's much easier to find. All right? So just leave it at that. So every time you reorganize the hard drive, you make it more efficient, and your computer, one of the things that makes your computer run faster, that's not the only thing, but it's one of the things that makes your computer run faster. Reorganizing your hard drive is also called your sort merge program, okay? Reorganizing the hard drive, sort merge is the same thing. Why do they call it that? Because you resort all the data and you merge it back into a pattern that's very quick and efficient for the computer access, so it makes things run faster. Okay, a little less technical. All right. Whenever you have a problem, you probably know this, but I'm going to tell you why it is, in case you're interested. All of a sudden, your computer really not working. You know, it craps out on you, it stops. Or your things don't function, you know, you press a button and it doesn't work. Things that usually work a certain way aren't working that way. Or it could be as bad as it's frozen, you know, it just doesn't work at all. and so on. And people usually tell you restart it. And that's a very good advice. And I'm going to tell you why. Every program has bugs. Every program written has bugs. It's just the way it is. There's just so many different kinds of instructions that you're bound to get some particular set of instructions that hasn't been tested and what's called debug. So, you know, just by doing this before that, after this, and so on, you can create a bug in the system or in the program, and it could freeze on you. So when you restart the system, you have to close the programs, and it puts everything in and brings it back to the beginning, and all those things you did to create that bug is wiped out for the moment. You don't lose anything. But those set of instructions that you were doing, okay, is gone and starts fresh and it starts working again. So restarting is a very good idea. Okay, and let's talk about people going on the internet all the time. And this is something maybe you know, maybe you don't, but could be very helpful. And a lot of people don't know it if they don't have a technical background. The difference between a URL and a web browser. Okay, don't get upset. URL, it doesn't matter what it means. It means a universal resource locator. All you have to know is at the very top there where you put in an address, not the Google thing where you type in a keyword. All right, and I'm going to talk about the difference between these, so it's very important. It should help explain things. When the very, very top, where you actually put in the specific exact address, when you go to my website, all right, let's say you want to go to a show and listen to the show, you go to blogtalkradio.com/ the word getting a dash, the word on, a dash, and the word top. And if you put that in right at the top there, you press go, bing, it'll bring you right to it. Or if you go onto my website, it's depressivesanonymous.org or depressivesanonymous.com, bing, you hit it, and it'll go to it. And that's an address. It has to be exact, perfect. No character can be wrong. If one character is wrong, it's not going to get there. Okay? Now, when you go into Google, okay, Google is a web browser. You just use keywords. So it doesn't matter if you don't get an exact, you know, character, because it's just kind of like, you know, getting it. It picks, first of all, it corrects it, the spelling for you, and all that stuff, or tries to. And then it's just like looking for anything with that terminology, all right, on the internet. Any website with that terminology on the... So you don't have to be precise, okay? So, you know, you could find my website by, let's say, going into... just putting in, you know, Depressives Anonymous. Or if you put in one of the show names, or one of the people who are on my show, you know, it'll come up on Google, and it'll tell you to go to, you know, you can go to getting on top, a Blog Talk Radio / getting dash on dash top, and so on. So, again, the difference is the very top thing where you need a specific address has to be perfect, exact. When you go into Google, it doesn't, because Google just needs an approximation, a keyword, and it'll find or get close to finding things, you know, that may match it. So there's a big difference there. So don't get confused because, you know, you're using Google. Oh, you know, you don't have to put it in perfectly. It finds it anyway. But when you put it in the very top, you need to be exact and precise. So that's maybe frustrating people. So now you understand what that is. The other thing I recommend, and I do it myself, you know, I mean, we're just human. And some people are great typists, some people aren't, and so on. when I go in, especially if it's a longer address, I'll copy it from somewhere, you know, like a copy and paste. I'll copy it and then paste it in there so it's precise. Because sometimes when you type it in, you get one character wrong. So that's a suggestion, okay, a hint on how to not, you know, get right to the address you want. Put it somewhere, you know. You could have it in your mail, you know, in your email thing. Like I have web addresses in my email for different people. Okay, I go there, pick it out, copy it, and then put in it. Or you could just put it in a Word document, put it on your desktop, and even the name of it. You could just copy the name. You don't even have to go in the document. I do that all the time, especially if something's long. I copy it and paste it. So that's a couple little hints. Another thing, it's just various little hints about the computer. The other thing is, I learned, this is a great, great thing I learned. Very useful in a couple of ways. It's called Notepad. Now, I don't know if they have an analogous thing on the Apple computers. They probably do. I don't know if they do what it's called. But on the PC, it's called Notepad. And, it's a little, the icon looks like a little notepad that's half open. All right? And you open it up, and you get this blank page, and it says, Untitled Notepad, File Edit, Format, View, Help, blah, blah, blah. And what you do when you get something from the Internet, okay, and you want to print it, for instance, or you want to save it in a Word document, you noticed that you got those little tiny zeros all over the place. It used to drive me crazy until I learned this trick. You know, those little zeros, and I had to go around deleting them because I'm anal. Some people don't care. But they're annoying, and if it's something you have to give to someone, you may not want them in there. Very simple way to get rid of them. You go to Notepad. You copy from the Internet. You paste it in Notepad. Notepad wipes out all that stuff, and when you recopy it from Notepad, all those zeros are gone. Beautiful. Now you put it in Word, you print it, whatever, they're all gone. Okay? Notepad strips out all the stuff. It's called HTML, okay? It's a language that they write into, when they write on the Internet. It's one of the languages they use. Anyway, in plain English, what Notepad does, it strips out all these things. You can't see them. When you print it or when you read it, you can't see them except for those little zeros. But when you copy from one form, like the Internet or wherever, and paste it somewhere else, it's going to have notations that are blind to you, that you don't see, but they're in there, and they come along with what you copied, okay? It's hanging on there somewhere. And when you put it in, it takes the format of the thing you took it from, okay? And sometimes you want it to take the format usually of where you're putting it to, right? Especially if you have something that's long and you're adding to it. You want to have a consistent format. And it used to drive me crazy too. Again, put it in Notebook, okay? Copy it from wherever you got it. Paste it in Notebook. When you copy it out of Notebook again, all that stuff will be stripped away and it'll be neutered of that. It'll take on the attributes of where you're putting it because there won't be any of these instructions that tell it to have a different format, okay? So use Notepad to strip away any of that stuff so that it looks the way you want it to look when you put it in a new place, okay? It's very, very useful. I use it all the time, and it's an excellent hint, idea. Okay, that's Notepad. All right. Okay, we're about 24 minutes into the show. So, about computers, just in general, just to get an idea of how a computer works. And I used to teach this to people, you know, when I was a program manager. Basically, if you want to understand the way a computer works, think of it this way. Analogous to a person. All right, the memory is the brain, right? And you have input and you have output. And that's pretty much, you know, pretty much it. And you have a hard storage. You know, for all intents and purposes, that's the way it works. So you put something into the computer. Either you pick it up from the internet, right? Or you type it in, or you read it in by a CD. I used to have floppy disks, or you read it in by a CD, or now you could your copier, your printer will, you know, you could scan it in, right? You can scan stuff in. So that's the input. And it goes into the, when you store it, it goes into the hard storage, and it also goes into the memory of the computer. Okay, so you read it in, it goes into hard storage where it's permanent, and the memory of the computer that you see when you're using it, and then you have the output, which is something you print, okay, or something you send out in an email, or you put out on the internet. That's the output, okay? So stuff comes in, you process it in the computer, and you put it somewhere, okay? You could even put it on your hard drive to store. And that's what's happening. You could be reading something from the computer, and then process means do something with it, change it in some way, and then put it back again, or you could output it on a printer, or on a CD, or, you know, whatever it might be, or put it out in the internet, okay? So it's in, process, out. And that's in general what computers do and how they work. And once you see them that way, it kind of simplifies the concept, okay? So that's a general overview. So I hope that was helpful to people, and it made your life a little easier. Maybe it saved you some time going forward. If you have any questions, you can email me. I'm not a super duper techie anymore, but in general, computers haven't changed, except when I was programming, I had to type on. Well, I would write on a coding pad, and they type up these cards, and you know, they had a group of people type the cards, and we gave it to an operator, and he ran it on a big machine. Now everything is interactive. Big difference. Okay, so I hope that was helpful to everyone, and if you'd like to find out more about me, you can go to depressivesanonymous.org. DepressivesAnonymous.org, and we're going to go out with Freight Train Freddy by Peter Tizone. Bye, folks. Be back next week.
He was up each morning with the dawn, because he knew his daily run was long and hard, and he had to be ready to get his freight train down the track. Determination he would never lack. The little locomotive called Freight Train Freddy, everybody was his friend, and they all helped him to the end to keep those freight cars rolling along steady. He never knew what to expect and was very careful not to wreck the little locomotive called Freight Train Freddy. The little locomotive called Freight Train Freddy.